Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dino Ray Ramos, and welcome to yet another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. This week, we have the uber-talented Janixa Bravo, director of Zola. Okay. Let's, you know, everyone knows what Zola is. And if you don't, just Google Zola Twitter thread. And it was this cultural phenomenon that took people by storm. It was this story that was wild, bonkers, out of control, but it was so riveting. And it was told on Twitter. It kind of changed the way we tell stories on Twitter. I don't know if it's the longest Twitter thread ever, but I think it's like 148, you know, tweets or something that tells this whole story of Zola. Just look it up. Anyways, A24 releases Zola on June 30th. Super excited for Janixa. She, you know what, Janixa, and if you haven't seen Lemon yet, she's so talented, and we loved having her on. So without further ado, here is Janixa.
Thank you, Janixa, for being here with us. Very excited to have you on today. Zola, which I've been waiting for this movie to come out ever since it was announced that it was being made into a movie.
I've been waiting since she was tweeting it.
Like, this was definitely so. Like, it was crazy, but in I loved it. So, yeah. So congrats, yeah, on the film. But before we get to that, we like to talk to people about sort of like what inspired you to get behind the camera or to get into this crazy business. I read that you grew up in, you're from New York, correct?
Yeah.
And then you lived in Panama for a little bit with your parents.
Yeah, both of my parents are Panamanian.
Yeah,
I am also from Panama, but I was born in New York. My parents are Panamanian. They had lived in New York in the late 70s to early 80s, mm-hmm. and then that's where I was born. And then I moved to Panama, mm-hmm. and lived there until I was 12. Mm. And then I moved to New York. So Spanish is my first language. I am ESL, though I do not sound ESL. No. I think I don't sound ESL. Maybe I shouldn't assume that.
No, you don't. Do people get like freaked out when they're like, you start just kind of speaking Spanish, or have you not freaked out, but like surprised?
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's kind of amazing because like I have fond memories of being on the train in New York with my mother and her whispering shitty things to me about someone, you know, like just being a total asshole about a person. And that speaking in Spanish is a little bit of this secret code that we had because it wasn't expected. I think I also don't read like Afro-Latina or Caribbean Latino. I don't think I read that way. I think I read very American. So. Mm-hmm. I just the other day I was walking my dog and this gardener said something shitty about my dog and I turned to him and then we had this like moment where he said, that's not what I meant because what I was trying to say. And I was like, what you was trying to say is that you don't need to be. And I, cause if you're talking about my dog, it's like a fight we're having. So I was just like, Mira, okay? And then
yes. Let him know.
Taken aback. And now we see each other, we run into each other all the time, and we're on good terms now. But we had a dark beat and now we're fine.
I love it. So growing up in a Latin household, what was entertainment, what was the entertainment industry? What was the perspective of the entertainment industry to your parents or to the people in your family? Like, was it something that they encouraged or supported?
If only a podcast could hear a face.
Yes.
That look, right? Though.
But yeah, I'm curious, like, how was it for you growing up and having these sort of aspirations?
Well, I'm going to say I'm really bad at interviews because I sometimes want to ask questions.
Okay.
But go ahead. Think of this as a conversation, like we're kikiing at Starbucks or your local coffee shop.
I prefer to support small business, but I like
support small business.
Curious where both of you are from and where your families are from, if those are.
Yeah, yeah.
My family's from Nigeria. I'm first generation. I grew up in Texas, but I was born in Texas. My parents came to America when they got married. When older, close to when they got married. So yeah, we talk about this in our podcast. This was not something.
Do they even understand what?
No, they don't really talk about it. And so it's in a first generation household, it's always, you have the four, I call it the four pillars of career, which is doctor, lawyer, engineer.
Business.
Like, or like, I think it's like pharmacy or something that they would be okay with, but it's like.
Or like the medical umbrella.
Anything in the medical field, right? Yeah, so that was what we were encouraging up until college. That's what I was sort of doing. In college I had, it's a long story, but then I switched basically, and that was the whole thing. But
I'm sure.
My parents are from the Philippines. I'm first gen as well. It's so interesting you're asking this, because I was listening to something the other day. It's like, I've never really sat down with my parents and had like, oh, tell me about your journey. Like, I could, like, I interview people all the time, and it's like, oh, how come I haven't really talked to my parents? I know, like, my dad joined the American military, which was kind of his way to get into the country. And we all know the problematic relationship with the United States and the Philippines. That's a whole other conversation. They immigrated here. Like, my parents got married in the Philippines, and then my dad enlisted. He came here first, my mom followed, and then like we hopped around, not as much as many other military families, but ended up in San Antonio, Texas. Like, me and Amanda are both from Texas, but we didn't know each other then, but I lived there for a while. But yeah, totally Filipino. But I think it's weird, and I was texting back and forth with my sister the other night saying, like, they no longer live in Texas, they live in the Bay Area, outside of the Bay Area, like San Ramon, like hella like suburban. But I see my parents got more progressive, which was so wild.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's, well, they're still my parents, like, they're still gonna be like, what the fuck you doing, you're stupid. But like, my life, like, decisions have been interesting. Like, when I first said, oh, I'm going to be a journalist, they're like, oh, so what's the backup plan?
Well, that's, so the reason I asked this is that I had a feeling my answer, something told me that you had a sense, that both of you had a sense of what my answer was going to be. No, it was not, an artistic path was not encouraged in my household. When I was little, very little, I wanted to go to the Olympics for track and field. And so I trained as a runner, and I, you know, had a Olympic coach even, you know, which is just, I think he was a retired runner who had run. And that was the plan. I was going to do 200 meter, 400 meter. I was really strong. My numbers were good. I had a lot of gold medals. I was competing at a relatively national level in Panama. And then when I was a teenager, I found out I had to have spinal surgery. And that basically stopped my running career. And I had always wanted to do theater, always. Like, I had always loved theater. I had done it when I could, when I wasn't, training. And so I remember it feeling like there was this end, but what I really saw was a beginning. And I was excited. I kind of used it as a way to get my parents to not feel, I basically used it. I mean, I'm trying to think of like, I knew that they thought, okay, you're not going to be a track star. Well, now you're going to be a doctor. And I was like, maybe I'm going to be an actor and I'm having spinal surgery. So we can't be mad about that. Okay. And I totally used it and it worked. I mean, I think they kept thinking it wouldn't work. And then I would find myself in medical school. And my best friend growing up, who's from Taiwan, like went to medical school, is a doctor. And I think they were just like, can you, I feel like if you ask them to define what I do now, they wouldn't be able to understand it. They like the part of my job that means someone's taking a photo of me and that photo of me might exist in like a magazine. Like they think that part's really cute. They understand acting. They don't understand whatever is happening behind the camera, even if I try to dissect it or explain it to them. I don't know. I'm so curious what they feel now. I think they still have anxiety about what stability looks like.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, our eyes are like, yeah.
But also because I'm recently divorced, or I've been divorced a few years, and I think that they understood stability to be something that I was getting from my husband.
Right.
Financial, emotional, otherwise like protection. And me being single and 40, and that they're like, oh, she's lost. Mm-hmm. And what's this job? It's not real.
Yeah. You know?
I think they feel really sad for me.
Yeah. I mean, we can't fault our parents, right? Like they want the best for us. And obviously like they have their idea of what's the best for us, but
but some questions would go a long way.
Yeah.
Yes. Literally just some questions like how much do you make?
Yeah.
Who's paying your rent? I mean, there's just like some questions that are not being asked.
Yeah. Right?
So their anxiety is like their own because they're not asking any questions.
Right. It is right. Like, I think you're right, because I feel like I know with my mom is becoming, she's a little bit more progressive than my dad. My dad has this ideology that this is how life is, and if you follow these things in life, then you'll be successful. And it's like, I don't, it's like you, like what you said, like asking the questions and really like, you know, seeing if you're, I feel like our parents don't really do that, because it's like they have this idea of what life should look like, especially, you know, at a certain age. And if something is not that way, it's like something is wrong or something is off. So,
I found what really helped. I don't know if you have siblings or not, but if your siblings have kids and then they have grandkids, it takes so much stuff off of you. Like, once my sister had her kids, they were like, oh, get the fuck out of our way, Dino. We're gonna concentrate.
We're gonna make sure they go to med school.
I could really. That's the other thing is I don't have children.
Yeah,
and I don't really want to have children.
And that's fine. And yeah,
they're. But it doesn't. It's like, well, what's the plan here, sis?
Like, so you don't want children. You're not a doctor. What are you lost. Doing?
Like I said, I think they think I'm lost. I think they're just like, I hope Chinook's okay.
Do your parents always like, and my parents tell me this, like I'm acting too American sometimes. Like when I'm doing stuff that's like not traditionally Nigerian, my parents would be like, oh, like, why are you acting so American? I'm like, but I grew up here. That's what I know.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's not necessarily like American. It's like, why are you acting like the Western, like Western people? Like,
oh, so like, why are you acting white?
I was just going to say, that's what I get.
You know, the way we do as Nigerians, like, why aren't you? Basically, that's what they mean by it. Like, you're acting. Yeah. Yeah. But it's like I said, I understand them. And I'm like, I get you want the best for me, but there are different paths to success in life. And I think that if you ask, like you said, and if you talk to me more, your qualms might be eased, but
yeah.
But speaking of, so for you, going back to your early days of your starting the career, were there any particular performances or movies or TV shows that really made you want to become an a filmmaker or an actor? Like, is there anything that sparked, can you recall anything that sparked your interest?
No, I can't pinpoint one thing that did that. I watched a lot of television. I watched so much TV. I'm mostly an only child. That is to say, I am my mother's only child. My father has other children, and my stepfather also has other children. So they're siblings in my life, but they're half and step, and we didn't grow up together. Okay. So all this is to say is I had a television in my bedroom. And so I watched a lot of TV, movies. We had a satellite at one point.
Oh, that you are fancy.
It's a Central America in the 80s. You know, I had like, I'm sure it was like bought in debatable ways, but we had a satellite. Oh, yeah.
I had a hella Filipino family who stole cable.
There was also like a stolen cable box at some point. I could rent movies from a video shop or video store. So all that is to say is I watched so much growing up and across the board. You know, I also, my parents took me to see the movies that they wanted to see, which are usually movies that I was not supposed to see. And there isn't one thing that did that. I just know that having grown up by myself and having had a kind of intimate relationship with a lot of inanimate objects, being a loner, not a chosen loner, I think that movies, television was very comforting to me. And, you know, if you were to be in my house right now, the TV is always on in the background. Like Turner Classic Movies is on two rooms away from here. And the radio is on next to Turner Classic Movies. And sometimes when people are in my home, they're just like, so what's the sound you want me to be picking up on? And I'm like, oh, I like the radio on. I like the television on. I like just hearing those voices. And there is something to being held sonically by.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought I was the only one, but I'm like,
you just have like background noise.
I like the I have TV on the background, even if I'm not paying attention. I like to keep it on just because, especially when I'm by myself, because it's like somebody's here.
Absolutely. There's someone in the other room.
Yeah.
You good? Do you need a glass of water? Okay, great.
So Janixa, you know, when you kind of first you entered the biz, or you opened the door into this world we call Hollywood, whatever. what were you looking to do? What kind of stories were you looking to tell? What interested you most about like film and TV?
I realize also I didn't all the way answer your previous question as you were just asking this question. Mm. And you know, I wanted to do theater. That's okay. What I wanted to do. I wasn't looking to do film. I think I had a fascination with film and TV, but to me, it was definitely a step two, a step three. And my first love was the theater. And regarding a transition into the film space, the question you just asked, Dino, I didn't actively have a plan or a list of these are the kinds of stories I want to tell. When I started writing, I noticed that I wrote a lot of the same kind of person. Mm. And it was somebody who was or maybe had an arrested development. It was somebody who felt very much like they were on the outside. It was a protagonist lacking in a home or a community. They tended to be characters that felt a bit displaced. And who were inherently lonely. And when I look back, they seem to be all iterations of myself or a way that I saw myself or where I was in that moment. So the answer is I think I can only gravitate towards the thing I need to work through or exorcise. Like, what do I need to, what am I, you know, what is therapy not answering? You know, like how much more excavating can I do here? Like each piece, for the most part, there are a couple of things I worked on that I just wanted to play in a certain way. But for the most part, the characters were always a way for me to explore some aspect of myself, to be able to also just be a little more tender and more generous with myself and where I was at or where I was not.
Mm. Yeah. you know, being a woman of color in this industry, of course, or just being a person of color, anyone in the margins, but specifically a woman of color, did you already kind of, when you did kind of make that transition from going to theater, from theater to film, and did you know that you kind of had to brace yourself and what you might and would encounter in the industry based on, I guess, like media and like, you know, colleagues and peers? Like, how did you, I guess, start to navigate this space, which isn't necessarily built for people of color? or like, how did you just begin your career and just, you know, manage expectations?
Yeah.
Gosh, this is such a good question. It's such a hardy question that I want to answer it succinctly because we could spend the whole hour talking about this. I feel like there's something a little bit green or not all the way developed about this question for me. Like, as I entered, I don't think that I totally understood that I would be seen as being limited or that I would be treated like, gosh, what is the word really? Like, I didn't know that I was Black in the industry. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I realize that sounds sort of goofy.
I think I get what you're saying.
So what I'm trying to say is, like, all of my life, I grew up around white people. And even when I was in Panama, you know, at home in Panama, of course, my parents are like Black Latin, and my friends and my family are Black Latin, but I went to an American school. And I went to a Panamanian school, then I went to American school, and I'd always been around white people. Junior high, when I moved to New York, very diverse, but again, there always been white people. I'd always been close with white people, high school, college. And I think I was so intimate or so close with so many white people that I'm grateful for, because I navigated through the world very similarly. And it wasn't until someone told me I was not like them that I was not like them. And so I think I was very formed and influenced by the people I was close to. I was also close to Black people and also close to brown people, but some of my closest, like most intimate relationships were with white men and white women. And I saw how they moved and I thought, well, but then I will move in the same way. Right. And some of that did benefit me, right? And then some of it, of course, didn't help me. And the blows felt like bigger and harder. And it took some learning to see. I just didn't know it was different, you know? And maybe that sounds a little goofy.
No.
But
no,
I was learning by example, right? Like all of my friends who were filmmakers.
Right.
I went to NYU to direct theater, or I went to NYU to be an actor and a director in theater. Made a lot of friends who were in the film school. All of them straight white men. And so I was like, well, I saw how he did it, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
He met with friction or hostility, and I was confused, and I didn't understand that so much of my hurdle was race and sex. I didn't know that.
No, that makes perfect sense, honestly, because it's like, oh, you don't know your differences until someone points it out to you. And then you're like, oh, wait a second. I thought we were on the same playing field, but you're on a different field that's nicer.
Yeah.
And I have mine longer and requires more work.
Yeah.
But no, it makes sense. Like, especially like me, I was like you. It's like growing up in Texas,
mostly white people all my life. My neighbors, my school was like maybe 3% Black people, but it was like, I didn't know about privilege and anything like that until really college, when it really started like hitting me in the face.
Yeah.
I didn't take notice of it maybe until college. Cause it's like, you know, like you said,
that's where you learn that you're different. Cause I went to, I know Amanda went to UT and I went to Texas A&M, which at the time rival. it was 88% white, I think. And then when I got there, And then that's where I joined the Filipino Student Association. And I was like, oh, these people aren't like me, but they were more like me than everyone else at that school.
Yeah.
And then I just, oh God, I became that idealistic college kid who think they could change the world. I was like, oh, let me do some spoken word poetry. Oh, aww, dear Lord. But it was part of my journey.
Okay.
We all come from somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. And it's why we are here, why we're here now. So, yeah. I mean, obviously everything happens for a reason. So I want to ask you about Zola, because you talked about, you know, the kind of things that you take from your life that inspire you in your work and that you write about. So what was it about Zola? Her name is escaping me.
She goes by Zola.
Okay, she goes by Zola. Okay.
I try to say real Zola to be clear that I don't
mean that's why I wanted Zola. I wanted to distinguish and say her name because I well, so what is it about real Zola
that real Zola versus on screen Zola. There that, you go.
It's movie Zola, it's real Zola,
yeah,
it's
there you go.
Life Zola, it's flat Zola, you know.
Right. But what was it about her story and her tweets that really stood out to you? And I know you came on this project in 2017, but I read that you had started writing about it or started working on it before. I don't know if that's true, but it was a quote from Jimmy, I think. Maybe I misread it, but I heard that you were really interested in being a part of this project, basically.
Yeah.
So.
The thread came out in 2015. Right. I tried to go after it in 2015, and
that was when James Franco was at one point, wasn't he? He was going to direct it, right?
Yes. So okay. When I tried to go after it in 2015, there were already five other entities, more or less, going after it, who all had money. Mm-hmm. So my efforts were, well, they didn't land because I didn't have cash. I had a brain. I was offering a brain.
Yeah. Talent. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, honey, we got craft. You can't pay the bills with craft. So, so between 2015, 2017, the IP, which is her life rights and this Rolling Stone article, were purchased by a production company. That production company attached a director, attached a set of writers. And so James and the other two writers were doing that, what would I call it? Like iteration one of Zola. Right. And then James stepped off of the film at the beginning of 2017. And I got wind that it was around again. And so I went after it. Mm. And the rest is, well, we're here.
Well, but what about her story?
What about it? What about it? That was your question. Like you can tell, I will answer a question in 89 sentences and
no, that's fine.
Still not answer it. I was so attracted to her wit and her power. And when I read the thread in 2015, I went and I did some digging on her. I was like, who is this? Mm-hmm. I know it all. And I was like, she's 19? 19?
Yeah. You know, right?
19? My God, if you saw Janix at 19, I mean, I don't know if we should see her, you guys. Like, she's not great.
I would love to see her at 19.
I think she's very uncomfortable, and I think she is pretending she's not uncomfortable. I think she's terrified. I think she's, like, working on finding her voice. Mm. Who I was at 19 was so much... I was not fearless. I was not a fearless 19-year-old. And I was so attracted to this fearless 19-year-old who also already had such a clear sense of her writer's voice. I mean, I thought, fuck, man, if I could have tapped into 10% of this part of myself at 19, like, who would I be today? Where would I be today? And I had this very maternal instinct around that, where when I read about her, I was like, I want to take care of her. And I want to protect her because the business can be very unkind and the business will take advantage of you. And I want to step in and sort of godmother her through this process. And that was, I wanted to godmother that voice. I wanted to take care of the individual that had that voice, that had that access, that to me, the thread was like a great piece of literature. Coming from the theater, I was like, this is a fucking incredible play. And mm-hmm. I want to make this play, and this voice needs this care, you know?
Yeah. I really love that you guys had her, the real Zola, involved in this project, because I feel like a lot of times in Hollywood, Hollywood likes to, you know, swoop up a lot of IP, a lot of life rights to people's stories, but a lot of the times they don't like to involve the actual people and the making of these films or these TV series. So I love that you guys had her. I don't know how the extent of her involvement, but I mean, I saw that she was doing press. She's been talking about the film. Like you're saying you wanted to protect her.
Her tweets got made into a book.
Yeah. So I'm curious. Was her involvement, was that something that was always along with the project, or was that something that happened when you came along?
I can't speak to iteration one. I'm not a part of iteration one. I didn't care what iteration one was, meaning it's just, that's not my story, right?
Yeah, right.
When I showed up, I was like, this is my story and this is how I want to tell it. Right. And for me, it was essential that she be a part of it. She is a personality and an entity very much born out of the internet. And from what I understand on the outside, I'm not on Twitter, but from what I understand about the internet really thrives on how you got it wrong. And that is the thing that feeds it, right? And so I was just like, yeah, dog, like we just have to bring her in. Yeah. Also because she is a person born out of the internet. I think if a lot of the internet says you got fucked over, I think she's going to hear that she got fucked over. Yeah. And that doesn't really benefit us, right? Yeah. One, that's like a real sort of, that's not like the deepest way to look at it, but that's one eye on it. And then the other was, it's only going to be better if she co-signs. It's only going to be better if I make a movie that she loves and that she goes, like, she's going to stand next to me, you know? Not everything goes well and not everything is received well or praised, but if she is standing next to me and she stands by the thing that we made, that I made, then I won already, right? Yeah. Like if the movie does well financially, if the movie does well in criticism, all of those things are also wins, but the first win is her approval.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, watching the film right from the jump, it's just like, I mean, I watched Lemon and, you know, I love your style of storytelling. And then, and what you did with Zola, it kind of has this almost pulpy vibe, almost, but also this kind of 70s realism kind of like vibe. And oh God, Taylor and Riley together. God damn.
Are they such a good duo?
All the actors.
The whole cast.
Amazing.
Like Coleman and
I always called him Greg from Succession, but
he's not Cousin Greg. I don't want anything to do with Cousin Greg. But I'm Derek.
He was
Derek.
I loved him. Yes, he is. But I loved him in this film. He
yeah. And it just the way it's been sculpted and just how it was told. And you know what? I love me a movie under 90 minutes. So give me
me too.
I'm so glad. And like how it ended when it needed to end. And I was just like, okay. And it's like seeing Taylor and Riley, like it's just so good. But when you were sculpting this, and from the Twitter thread to the film, you know, how do you think kind of IP or just Zola changed the way we are telling stories right now? Or more specifically, how has like that whole Twitter thread kind of inspired you in terms of your storytelling?
I don't,
in terms of where you find stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What I hope it does is, right before Sundance last year, I was in my car driving and I had NPR on, and I think Film Week is the program that comes on Friday mornings. And they were talking about Sundance. And I forget who it was said it, but Zola came up. And I was so excited because I listen to this program all the time in my car when I'm driving. And but it came up that there was a tonality around it, right? It was like a movie based off of Twitter thread. What are they going to do next? To make a movie out of a board game? And that was the beat. And I was like, well, bitch, actually,
like, Battleship Pugliana.
And Clue is pretty fucking good. So yeah, they have. But it was this reductive, dismissive tone.
Right.
And I think that the decision makers, it's less about the three of us thinking that the story has value, really, because we don't have money to make shit, right? It's the people at the very top. It's the people that are actually financing. And so what I hope that the movie says is that there ought to be a multitude of like avenues or doors where we can find new creatives who have really like not a direct road to the thing that we're, you know, all inside of or next to. And what I hope that also happens in addendum to that is that a film can be an example of how to engage those individuals and not use them in the making of, you know, but I can't all the way speak to how it's, I don't know. I mean, it hasn't come out yet. So right. I think the movie has to come out and probably has to do a certain way for that dialogue to happen.
Yeah, right. So what do you hope, the movie's coming out soon, it's coming out June 30th. What do you hope people take away from it when they see it?
You're gonna be sad to hear this because I never answer this question. And I never answer this question because I'm much more interested in what you and I'm much more interested in what you took away from it. Like, I want what's Amanda's takeaway, what's Dino's takeaway. That's what feeds me as the filmmaker, right? Mm. Like, I don't answer this too because, not because I think of myself as a painter, but I am reminded of, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Guernica. It's one of my favorite pieces of art. It's a Picasso piece, and it lives in this museum in Spain called Centro de Arte de Reina Sofía. And it is...
Oh my God, I actually been there.
You have? So I'm sure you've seen it. Guernica is this masterpiece. It hangs on a wall all by itself, but in the room leading up to it, and maybe this has changed, you see like all the like steps leading up to it and like individual pieces. And I don't want to say too much about the painting because you should just look it up on your own. Yeah. It's so fantastic. But every time I've seen that piece, I had never had the privilege of what it was meant to mean to me, right? Like, well, what did you want me to take away from this? And it's always been about my individual experience. And so much, I've seen it so many times, and every time something different happened, and every time I focused on something else. And I was bringing who I was that day to my experience of the piece, the journey to get to the painting through the museum, the person that cut me off, the man that like smoked in my face, like all of that was a part of what I was taking away. So it's hard for me to answer that because, you know, I made the movie. The movie is very much in my DNA. There isn't a takeaway to be had because mine is going to be totally individual. And even though Amanda, you and I are both Black women, our experience in film will not be the same. And so I ultimately am more excited by your takeaway, and I would love for you to answer that question.
Yeah, Amanda, you go first.
Dino's like, you go first, I'm writing the notes down.
All I will say is I really thought that the piece read authentic. I've never experienced a day like that, but I felt like
it's bonkers.
Personalities wise, no, I've never been. But it felt really authentic. I really liked how, I don't want to give away too much of the movie, but I liked the journey that Zola's character went on. I liked how she was very, like, you, and thinking about 19 and the fearless thing, like, I like putting that together. That is crazy. Like at 19, do you how confident are you at standing up for yourself? You know, and I think it has like a really great message, the film, and like I said, I think the performances, they all killed it. I think that everybody should watch this movie. I think people anybody could get something out of this movie. Really.
Yeah, I think. No, I just think what I like to kind of dissect the things, you know, the characters and like all, okay. First off, I was like, when I was watching it, I was like, imagine how this would have been if a man directed it. That's what I was like thinking. I was like, it would be right. Totally different. And I just was just like, the film could have easily fallen into a trap of like, oh, pimps and hoes, that kind of thing. But it's like, oh, no, it's not that. It is about Zola, and I do like how she is. She could have just been easily like, oh, I'm a sassy dancer, whatever. But I like how Taylor portrayed her so much. It's like,
yeah.
And then it teaches, I think it also teaches self-worth and value and when to say no to kind of someone who is bossing you around and just right. having agency over your own journey. And I think, because in a way, you know, Zola is our surrogate, right? And we're living this through her. And I think I've been through experiences, not like yeah. this, but like people, like, you know, a friend's like, oh, come on, it's gonna be fun. And then you go, and then you're just like, oh my God, I do not want to be here. It's like, I do not want to be here. Something bad's going to happen. And then something bad happens. And you're just like, I'll see, I told myself, but I still went on that journey. Yeah. But I just like, and then I think going back before about, you know, people like kind of dismissing the movie because it's based on a Twitter thread. I was just like, it's because Zola knows how to tell a story. And we saw something in that. And it was although it's bonkers, it could have easily been pulpy bonkers satire, but it was like a genuine journey or genuine narrative that's like, oh, wow, this is interesting. It's something we haven't seen before. And I want to get to know Zola more.
Yeah.
The Zolaverse. Imagine the Zolaverse, the Zola cinematic universe.
I mean, we're in it right now. This is our first entry.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And then we'll have an end game with Thanos. And
this is her MCU.
Yes, it is. Okay. And so we'll see.
The casting, like, for, I mean, I'm not just saying this, the casting is so on point. Like, I was like, oh, these people are like so good. And I've seen Taylor before and things and Riley and everyone. But it's just like, it's just so fun to watch. And also,
it is fun.
You learn something.
Yeah, it is fun. And I liked how like the comedy was in there, but it wasn't like, it, you know, it was just seamlessly like woven into this narrative. And like I said, I think there's something there. I mean, Dino just kind of pointed out, but I think there is something in there for everybody to watch.
Yeah.
So yeah, go see it, people.
Yeah, go see it, guys.
Go see it to all your friends.
So, but what's next for you? Is there anything that you can talk? I know there was a Jake Gyllenhaal project that was announced some time ago.
Okay, Jake Gyllenhaal, come on.
But is there anything else you can talk about or you can tell us? Or no. If you're not.
Oh my God! Come on, come on, just tell us.
I know it's so frustrating. Actually, this is something. It's not dissimilar to what happened with Zola, where like. I got the job in 2017 and I think it didn't come out that I was working on it until like 2 years later.
Yeah.
And some of that has to do with the fact that so much doesn't come together, right?
Yeah.
Like the project with Jake Gyllenhaal is surprising to me that it exists because we haven't sold it. It was an article that I was attracted to that I read 2 years ago that somebody else was on it and then they dropped out and then it came back to me and I met the writer and last year and I sent it to Jake's company saying I think he would be great for this and it literally doesn't exist. Like there's a script
right.
and but we're in rewrites right now and then we have to take it out and sell it and hopefully somebody buys it, but if it's not bought there was this announcement for a thing that never comes to be, and that's totally possible. Yes, there are plenty of reasons to say yes, but there are plenty of reasons to say yes and people still say no, right?
Yeah. So
I while, you know, the little kid in me wants the birthday cake, I understand this holding back until it actually is tangible because there's so much ellipsis in our business. Our business is so, it could have been, it could be. Mm-hmm. Wow, they've been working on that for 10 years and now, you know, it's like so much of it is like that. So there are a handful of these projects. I seem to be on a lot of these projects and I don't know if they're going to happen.
Yeah.
But But I'm gonna have a job, guys. It's fine.
I mean, okay. That's the nature of the industry, right? It's like throwing everything against the wall. Like, you're just constantly spinning plates.
Right.
Exactly. That's the other thing. I'm working on too many projects at once because only really probably one or two of them are gonna happen. And so many of them won't, you know?
Yeah. Well, nature of the biz.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get some concrete announcement soon.
For the Zola Cinematic Universe. The ZCU.
That's right. That's good. I like that.
Okay. So we like to wrap up this interview with this fun section we call the facts or the FAQs, just random questions to end it off with. So your first question is, what is the last series that you binged?
Ooh, that's good. Shit. Does it have to be like in its entirety?
Oh, no. Or like what you're currently watching or whatever.
Yeah. Guys, I'm watching Law & Order season 6. I just finished season 5. I just started season 6 last night. Oh, wow. It's great. It's really great. I miss the boat on Law & Order. I think that I moved to the US and it was going, and I think I just associated it with grandma shows or something.
Yeah.
It felt like something your parents were watching. It just felt old, very adult. And so I just missed it. And I, a few years ago, really got into Law & Order Special Victims Unit because I was like in a hotel and there was nothing on television, but you could rent like a $25 movie that you were like, why would I be renting a movie for $25? And so on the USA Network, there was a what do you call it? When a marathon. SVU, but it was only the ones that starred like famous people. And so I ended up watching, I think, 20 hours of SVU and was like, wow, guys, what have I been missing out on? This is genius. I'm obsessed. And I've really resisted regular Law & Order, but my editor, Joy McMillan, who edited Lemon and Zola with me, is like, yeah, it's great, but OG Law & Order. And I set a series recording and it started and I was like, guys, there you go. I'm in. Chris Noth, I didn't realize that like Big from Sex and the City was on Law & Order. I'm like, oh, what?
A lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I think any and all actors have been on some sort of Law & Order thing.
I really am trying to will this into existence because regular Law & Order is not on, but SVU is still on. I want to be the person at the beginning of the episode that finds the body. I want to be like eating a bagel and being like,
oh no.
And then you have like that brief conversation where you're like, yeah, I was just eating a bagel and I was on my phone and then I saw a head.
And then they're writing down, they're like, uh-huh. Thank you.
I want to play that person so badly. I really want mine to be like, I'm running in the park.
Yeah, there you go. Or speed walking.
Yes, I'm walking a dog, you know, and I'm like, oh my God. I really want that for me. And I hope you guys want it for me too.
Okay, yeah, we'll put that out into the universe.
Yeah, will you?
We're putting that into the universe. But I've learned, I mean, I've only watched a couple episodes of SVU, and from what I gather, a lot of the gateway is SVU. Like, a lot of people just start with SVU, and then they just start watching everything else.
Kind of like how people were with soap operas, right? Like, didn't a lot of these big stars come through soap operas, and then, like, they're all... Yeah.
Yeah. Like Julianne Moore was on Guiding Light or something.
I mean,
like,
can you believe it? Her co-stars must still be pissed.
They're like, oh, ooh. Someone else was, I think, Josh Duhamel. He just looks like a soap star. I think he was, though. But
was
so many people came on. And then I think in Australia, everyone is on that show Neighbours. There's a show called Neighbours that everyone was on or something like that.
It's like a new show.
Yeah. But okay, so Janixa, if you were in a room with you and your doppelganger and $2 million, what would you do?
Oh, I mean, is this like thievery or like?
No, it's like say you're just in a room with your doppelganger and you kind of just find yourself in there with your doppelganger and $2 million. How do you assess this situation? And
I'm very confused. I'm just sort of like, well, who are you? where are you? What do you do? I think I would have a lot of questions for the doppelganger.
Honestly, well, million, like, would you even like,
would you kill your doppelganger to get the money?
Oh, yeah. So, but I would rather them just have it and kind of see. I mean, I don't have $2 million, but
That's so giving of you, though. That's
yeah,
nice.
I mean, I think I'm just more curious about them, and I have a feeling we could also just split it if, like, yeah. if someone has to take the money to get out of the room, we could just be like, let's split it, right? Like, that's fine. No one needs to die here. Okay. But I like need to understand where you are journeying and what are you
right.
Doing.
Yeah.
Because that is a confused, like, I was thinking about this question too, and I saw this, like, someone who looks exactly like me, $2 million. I would be confused, but I think I would just take the money and run.
Wouldn't you be fascinated by them? I'm also just like, who has better style?
I would be scared. I would be scared of them, honestly, of myself. I was like, this is weird. But anyways.
Okay. Does she read more than I do? Probably.
You're like really sick. Okay. Next question. How would you prepare for a zombie apocalypse? Okay, so like, what's like your number one essential thing for a zombie apocalypse? What do you think?
I have a feeling I'd be very bad at this because I would be like, what hat am I wearing? What is like a neutral hat that's going to get me through a lot of looks?
So and it's also functional, like protecting against the elements, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And also something about warmth, I would be concerned about temp. I have some of those silver blankets that you give to runners at the end of a race. And I think I would probably try and store some of those. I'm assuming in this apocalypse, I have to leave my house, right? I was like, can I just stay here? So if I'm on the move, I'm packing a lot of those silver bags or getting a good nooch hat. Probably some sort of shawl. I'm very concerned about the temperature, you guys. I have a shaved head. I'm very concerned about the temperature.
I like how you haven't mentioned food yet, but that's okay.
I can do shockingly really well with very little food and very little water. I'm not saying that's a positive thing about me, but I can.
Okay, that's good.
So I'm like, food will figure it out. Food's gonna weigh me down. Like, I'm moving place to place. Oh, also, I guess like a lot of cash, although cash likely has no value in this world.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
From your doppelganger. Your doppelganger will have the cash.
Exactly.
Oh, okay, so.
I'm also probably carrying my dog. Like, I just think I'm not getting far.
I'm
not getting far because I'm bringing my dog.
She's but at least you'll look good.
Back to zombie apocalypse. Like,
I'm one of the first to die. I'm dying at the top of the movie because I'm like walking my dog in a good hat.
Starts barking at all the zombies.
Yes, she actually would.
And then the zombie starts speaking Spanish to you, thinking that you can't understand them.
Yeah, I'm just like, fuck.
Okay, so Janixa, we know that you were a runner in the past, but if you could compete in any Olympic sport other than track and field, what would it be?
Now, in this world, am I good at this sport?
Or
Janixa bringing Janixa like, to the sport?
Janixa, you are good at, you've been training. Like, let's just say you've been training for something, but what would that something be other than track and field?
I mean, I think a lot of us wish we could be a gymnast.
Right? Hell yeah.
Like, there's just Simone something Biles. So stunning and so beautiful about the way that they move. I would say that or ice skating. Like, I find those to be really moving, that kind of choreography and the musculature that it takes, and that
those athletes for real,
yeah, those decisions are happening so early, right? Like, that to be good at those sports, you have to make that choice very little, yeah, like, or that choice has to be made for you very little. So I'm pretty fascinated by that. I also like the javelin. There's something really beautiful about that, right? Like, is that the right thing? Is that what I mean, the javelin?
Yeah, javelin, yeah. The one where you, it's like that wobbly thing or the pole vault.
Yeah.
Pole vault, that's the one. Yes, and you move with it. Yes, that's that one. That one, I really like that. That's sexy.
Yeah. Fencing. If you were a gymnast, fencing.
Fencing's hot. I just am listing a list now, guys. Fencing's pretty hot.
But if you were a gymnast, what would your kind? You know, everyone has their specialty, right? Like floor, beam, parallel, horse, whatever. what would you want your specialty to be?
Uneven bars.
Okay, yeah. Good. I'm all good.
That's like one, and then there's another one, right?
Yeah. And then that move they do when they flip over into the lower bar, and they it looks like the bar hits them in the stomach.
To the higher bar and keep going back and forth. Like, yeah, that shit looks hard.
That landing is always also like, it's just like, you know, when that 1 foot moves and your heart slips.
And then you're just like, oh my God, and then all of a sudden become experts in gymnastics.
There's a really great documentary. It's very, very long. I think it's the 84 Olympics. Whenever the Olympics were, it's not 84. Whenever the Olympics
in LA.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that 84?
I want to say that sounds right. Maybe 80. It sounds right, I think.
Well, we can look it up.
It is, but it's on Criterion. It is 4 hours long. But, you know, in that world, this is great for you, Amanda, because you'll just like having movies on in the background. You meet a lot of the people that competed. And obviously, if you want to find out who wins, you can know who wins. But the stories are so emotional, but they're also really like a bridge. So you spend time with a runner and you spend time with a gymnast and you see some of like their world and their family. And it's just, and it's also shot on film. So it's like gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Nice. Highly recommend.
Did you shoot Zola on film?
Yeah, we did on 16mm.
Okay. Yeah, nice. Yeah. I knew it.
Dina was the, what's it called? Cinephile now. Okay. What piece of advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
I know we talked about your 19-year-old self before, but
let's... You're back.
I would tell myself to spend a little less time comparing myself to others.
Yeah.
That is such good advice, like even for anyone.
I realize I turned 40 this year and something happened where my shoulders dropped a little bit more, or I really could feel that I gave a little less care about what wasn't feeding me.
Yeah.
And it was such a relief. And I was like, I can't believe that I get to feel, I'm feeling this way now. I wish I'd felt this when like my body was stronger, you know, or I wish I'd felt this when I just had more in front of me. Not to say that like my end is coming, you know, I don't believe that, but it was just such a relief. I had spent so much time worrying about what other people thought and so much time comparing my road to other people's roads. And I just think it was a little bit of a waste. And I think that there are a lot of days that were spent like that, that really took me out, you know, that really took me down for the count, that were a depression, a real proper depression. And I think that stuff is useful. Feeling bad is very useful to being in this business, to being good at the work. All of that stuff is useful. But I also think there's wasted time there.
Right.
Yes. It's, yeah, just kind of measuring how much, like I'm past 40 and I kind of feel that kind of vibe of like, oh, I'm giving less fucks now, but I still give fucks, you know, that kind of thing where you're just like, I kind of care what you think, but you know, just leave me alone, that kind of thing. And also just wanting to stay at home all the time. And like, yeah, it's like, come on, man, my back hurts.
Especially after this year?
Yes. It's like, oh, this is how life could be, sweats all the time?
Yeah.
Sign me up. I like seeing people, but yeah.
The movie is called 16 Days of Glory, by the way.
Okay.
I'm going to watch that too.
It also seems to be on HBO Max.
HBO Max. Yeah. HBO Max has some good content.
They secretly have really good movies. You have to dig a little to find them, but they do have some really great pieces.
And some limited series too. I've been seeing some good limited series on HBO.
Okay, you know, I fuck with Mayor of Easttown.
Gonna say that was the last series I binged. But in between that and today, I did watch all of season 5 of Law and Order. So I just have to be honest. Good. Yeah, I think it's 22 episodes. So I spent
16 days
hours.
Of what? What was it again?
Glory. 16 days of glory.
Okay. All right. Cool. And Mayor of Easttown. Yeah, I was obsessed with Mayor of Easttown for some reason, just because Kate Winslet is like wild in that. Like, I was just like, glorious. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So our last question, Janixa, is is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, in film and TV, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, or creator, that is not kind of well known or is doing dope things that people need to notice that you want to kind of just give a shout out to? You could talk to about multiple people, and or just like even name yourself. I remember when Jimmy O Yang was on, he just was like, oh, myself.
Gosh, yeah. That's such a, so here's what I'm going to say, because I'm going to be bad at this answer. My fear is that I'm going to mention someone who doesn't feel this way about themselves. And then they'll think that I'm categorizing them in some kind of bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not where they're seeing themselves. So I have an anxiety about that. Yeah. So I'm going to skip this question. Very excited that other people have comfortably answered it.
Who's just doing dope shit right now that you want to give a shout out to? It doesn't need to be anybody
underrepresented or anything. Just like what's inspiring you, or who's inspiring you?
It can be art, it can be music, it doesn't have to be film or TV or anything.
Okay, that works. I like that one.
Okay.
A filmmaker that I really dig, who I think is phenomenal, her name is Kat Solon. And she's an old friend of mine. She's an old new friend. Like, I met her first through her work in music videos. And then she went on to have this series on Adult Swim called A Shivering Truth. And she also works in puppetry and in animation. And I just think she's such a radical artist. And I am really excited to see what she does next. And the other person I would shout out is someone who I met a few years ago at a writing residency, whose name is Anu Valia. And she had made a short film that had done pretty well at Sundance. It won an award there and it had a festival circuit. And she's recently moved into directing episodic television. And I also am really excited to see what is going to come of her voice when she gets to work in the feature space for both of those women.
Yay.
Oh my God. Love it.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, I love the convo. And we love the movie. And we're not saying that.
Yeah,
otherwise. You are. You've been paid. I know it.
if we didn't like it, we would have been all, oh, can we just like push Janix's episode?
No, but congrats on the film and to everything that you're doing.
You're
a great streak. And I'm going to say congratulations, and I can't wait to see what else you have in store.
In the Zola universe.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.